Welcome to Conversations in Cannabis. Today's episode features Ricardo Willis, CEO at California-based Hanu Labs. This episode was recorded in person during MJ BizCon on October 20th, 2021.
Start at the very beginning.
Okay.
When you first decided because you're classically trained as a chef, and deciding, hey, I don't want to start an edible company, or I don't want to do this, I don't want to do that. What made you want to get into extracts or get into Jetty as your first foray into cannabis, and why get into cannabis in the first place?
Well, one, I've been using cannabis since I was like 14, 15 years old, so I always enjoyed it. I was an oddball. And while everyone was, I was in like this college preparatory school and everyone was telling me I was gonna be a loser. And I always felt like cannabis balanced me. It was just my thing. And it was Ricardo. And so when I got out to California, I just finished my master's degree. I had been in school for like 8 years straight, working really hard to rebuild myself. And I had a family at a young age, so I was just doing what I had to do. And I got out here, and the first thing we started, my business partner and I started thinking about, was a tour business. So we both were hospitality professionals. We both had MBAs. We're like, this is perfect for us. Let's go this route. And so we get into it, and it's literally like 2 years before we actually should have started this business. But I found out that I needed more education in cannabis. So I knew a way for me to do that was to go and find a job and work part-time. So I needed to earn extra money. At the time, I had just gotten to California. I was out there for a few months. I was taking care of my family at home because they were, it was like prospecting for gold. I was going out there to stake my claim. And I ran out of money really quick. I ended up sleeping in my car. And so I'm like, what am I gonna do? And so I was like, I need to make some extra money. So I saw this listing in the East Bay, Canada. And it was Luna saying, oh, I'm looking for a demo person who can come in and do demos like 2 to 4 weekend. I was like, okay, this is cool. I work Sunday through Thursday. I'm off on Fridays and Saturdays. So I'm like, okay, this is perfect. So I go and meet with her. I show up and I'm wearing, I wasn't wearing a blazer, but I think I had on a vest and a button-up shirt and jeans, and I was really nicely dressed. And she was like, and you're here for the cannabis position? And so I was like, yeah, I was like, I'm 40 something. At the time I was like just turned 40 years old. I'm like 40, about to be 40. And I'm not a little kid. So I was like, yeah, this is me. And so we talked and we hit it off really, really great off the first encounter. And she was like, I'm gonna train you. And she opened the doors for me to cannabis. I mean, she literally opened the doors. And we went everywhere. She introduced me to everyone. And I kind of became like her mentee. And I started growing. I started learning about the space. I was doing things like I would go to the guys at Jetty and say, all right, man, I want to learn more about the extraction process. But I work during the day. So I work from like 1 to 9. So I can't do it then. But why don't I come in and work midnights?
Right.
And work for a few hours and help you guys fill and cap. Because I wanted to know every single step of the supply chain and how it worked, and I wanted to learn about extracting. So, I mean, it was cool. I learned a bunch of stuff. I handled a lot of cash in the beginning because it was like pre-2018, so we had the gray year. And so I learned a lot. I traveled a lot. They brought me down here to MJ BizCon to the first one. I did the Golden Key Party. And did that for several years, and it just expanded my horizons in cannabis.
Well, and it's crazy that it's such a small circle, and that Luna like brought you in that way and kind of gave you. Is that the one thing that is missing from a lot of people that are trying to get into this industry, is the willingness to say, hey, I have a traditional job during the day, but I will work at midnight just to learn pieces of the chain?
I think, I was talking to someone that I brought down with me to MJ BizCon, and they were saying, you get up every morning at 4 a.m. And I was like, it takes desire and drive to get what you want. And so if that means that I used to work from 6 a.m. in the morning till 6 p.m. in the evening, and then I would go to school for 3 to 4 hours after that and not get home at 12 o'clock. And people were like, why are you doing all this? You could just go get a job and work your way up. But I'm like, look where I am now. So I think that it's important that people remember that starting somewhere, just learning for me, my first position there was demos. Yeah. So what did I learn? Patient education. I learned all the finite details about cannabis and about production and about, you know, what concentrates actually was. Where are you going to get that education at? There weren't any of these schools that's popping up all over the place. I'm not going to get into that, but, you know.
And doing it at 42, it's never too late to get into this industry.
I didn't go back to school until I was 32. So it does not seem foreign to me to change industries at 40. I'm going to do this until I'm ready to scale out, and then I'm going to go become an attorney. So I might be 55 years old when I decide to do that, but I don't think we should ever put limitations on when we want to do things and how much we're going to put into it. And, you know, I think when you start doing that, then you're definitely getting old.
Well, and you're absolutely crushing right now as CEO now for Hanu Labs. And, and when you're looking at the totality of the vaporization space, when you first got in, obviously vaporization devices were not what they are now. Being somebody that's seen kind of the scaling of the accessories market in cannabis, what are some of the things that have surprised you for the accessories market?
I think seeing the first laser technology device being introduced was pretty cool. I saw that at Chance a few months ago, and I thought that was awesome. But these guys were like, look, we based this off the design, off what you guys had did 9 years ago. And we see a lot of products that these guys have designed, and they tell us, they're like, you know, we saw the Vape Exhale when it first was released, and we wanted to go in that direction of creating, you know, really fine and high-end products. So I think that they've done great. I'm blown away by the technology that I see out, you know, just the G-Pen, the PAX, all the smaller, you know. The one thing about PAX that just blows my mind is that they took this small little device, put this app behind it. You can get it up to like 790 degrees. I mean, when Jetty showed me that back in 2016, we were going to a trip to Tahoe. And they was like, yeah, check this out. And they were like, Rick likes all this like stuff like that. And I was new to the company, but I was vocal. And I was like, you guys have to do this. Literally after 2 days, like, you have to do this. And that was one of the main things that helped them grow and establish themselves to become the brand that they are today, is moving in the packs.
Well, and when you're looking at, you know, the totality of the market, you're looking at kind of innovation, what do you think the future of the accessories market will be?
I can't say. I think it's just gonna keep going and going and going. I've been working with a lot of manufacturers over abroad, and some of the technology that they're working on now, I mean, there are patents that haven't even hit the market yet. There are designs that haven't even hit the market, and the sky's the limit. So I think that now that they're beginning to understand and having relationships with guys like myself and other people in the industry that can provide them with insight on the user experience, is something that's going to be key to developing like out of this world products. And I got some products up my sleeve that I'm going to bring out that I think is going to blow people's mind in a couple of years.
Well, I'm excited to see what you guys got coming down the pipeline. Taking it from you being introduced now as the CEO earlier this year, obviously first African-American CEO for a vaporization company, when you look at that as, say, a model for the rest of the African-American or minority communities that are trying to get into cannabis, what advice would you give to, say, young minorities that are trying to break into the industry for the first time?
I would say first, it's okay to want to be an entrepreneur, and it's okay to own. But I think you should always start at an entry-level position if you can, or if you have professional experience in a specific, you know, industry or discipline. If you're an accountant, you can transition into the cannabis space and do the same thing. You can start the career path and begin to work your way up, and before you know it, you can be CFO of the company. So I think that the mindset has to be go in, work, be a consultant, you know, learn the industry, make friends, make enemies, do everything you need to do to establish yourself. But at the same time, I think that we're a community. So once you get into the community, it takes time for people. We're talking cannabis. You know, for years, nobody trusted one another. So now you have newcomers coming in. So, you know, get involved on the grassroots side. Go out and do some protesting. Go out and do some compassion. Go out and do those things that make you not seem like you're money hungry and you're just in it for the dollars. And this is what I learned from Luna. And this is what I learned from the NorCal cannabis community, because we all were very tightly knit as a community. And it's still people that I don't know, but when I walk in and somebody says, oh, you don't know Ricardo, they're like, oh, you know him, then you know we good.
That's what I was saying earlier. It's kind of a weird family, a very small, you know, circle of community where everybody kind of knows each other. And when, especially in Northern California, you're talking about like the Tim Blakes of the world, you know, the Emerald Cup, the Emerald Triangle. When you decided that this was going to be your career and you're looking at, say, other entrepreneurs who are getting into the space, what are some pitfalls that you saw some other people make that you wanted to say to yourself, I can't go down that same route?
I think jumping into something prematurely, not really figuring out what it is that I, you know, wanted to do. I knew when I came in what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a force to be reckoned with. And that was going to be difficult for me to establish that relation, you know, that reputation. But I knew that, you know, hard work was going to help to determine that. And, you know, I think trusting people too easily and, you know, not realizing that some people, they say they know the game and they, you know, they're a representative of the game, but some people don't. And I mean, it's just like any other industry. You know, as a chef, we got guys that came in and tried to sell us on everything all the time.
Yeah.
And I had to be a little more discerning in how I dealt with them and how I built those relationships. And the ones that took care of me, I took care of them. And, you know, we had long, prosperous relationships. And it's the same thing in the cannabis space. You know, I'm not the smartest CEO. I'm not the most knowledgeable CEO. But I'm going to be up first and I'm going to be last to bed. And that was the same way that I operated in the culinary space, the same thing I bring to the business room. First in, last out. And if you're willing to talk to people, learn, those are the things. You know, don't come in with that attitude like, I know everything. Because you can smoke weed for 20 years, but you don't know everything about the plant. And it's developing every day. And when I first heard first slogan I've heard is that we've just discovered 300 terpenes in the last couple of years. That told me I didn't know anything in 2016 when I got in, because I had no idea of what a terpene was. And so that education is what got it. And I came in like a blank slate and let the industry paint this. They did this. I didn't do this. They did this.
Well, and that's a very interesting thing. I mean, you're absolutely right. Consumer mindset and even entrepreneurial mindset towards what cannabis is, you know, mm-hmm. starting to learn about the different cannabinoid makeups, starting to learn about the terpene profiles right. of the plant. Are you surprised that it took this long for the industry to kind of reach that level of education? And do you see that kind of accelerating as we move forward?
Well, I mean, I used to be a college professor. I used to teach culinary arts. So I am a strong proponent for education. And I think that this industry is hungry for education. The consumer is hungry for education. The seniors, who are probably have the largest disposable income that's available, are looking for education. They won't dive into this industry unless they get the education that's required.
Right.
And I think you're starting to see more companies understand that, especially with the apps, the integration into the website, and, you know, teaching these people what a terpene is, what dabs are, what CRC versus a live resin versus a sauce versus a diamond, and then understanding that these customers want that because they want to be efficient when it comes to cannabis. And I'm a brag and say I probably dab the most first timers in California. I'm gonna get in trouble for that one, but I've dabbed people that are 80 years old, and they were nervous of taking a dab. And it's because, you know, they see the kids talking about dabs and stuff like that. They're like, oh, they're going to cough their lungs out. And I was like, no, this device is made for you to be able to take a nice, efficient dab. You don't need a lot of concentrate. I'm going to show you how to take it in, and I'm going to tell you to push it out really quickly, because it's going to go through the blood-brain barrier really, really quickly by just going through the nose, just in and out. And those guys would learn it, and it stuck with them. And then they wanted to learn more about, oh, how can I cook my edibles? How can I do this? And then teaching them about the temperatures. Because for cannabis vaporization, temperatures are very, very important. And I think that that is something that all of us need to be concerned about, because the biggest and the fattest dab doesn't mean that it's healthy for you. And that is very important, the health aspect.
And when you're looking at, say, you know, people that are apprehensive to taking dabs, I mean, you mentioned 55 plus, which is the fastest growing demographic in cannabis. When you're talking about, say, somebody that from the, say, the 70s or the 80s who had taken a brownie, take a small piece off the side of the brownie, and now they're completely lit beyond belief. How do you help overcome that barrier of apprehension for somebody that maybe had a bad cannabis experience in the past to say, hey, look, the industry has moved forward with its education, it's moved forward with its dosing.
Yeah.
You don't need to take a slab of a dab in order to get what the effect that you're trying to achieve is.
Again, it goes back to education. You have to get the people out there to engage the consumer. And this is where you know, demos, PADs come into play at. I spent literally every Thursday and Friday, 4 PADs in those 2 days. And they were always focused on education. We were talking to them about what concentrates were. We were talking about what the difference between refined and full spectrum oil was back in 2016. So when a lot of these guys were moving in the directions they were moving in, Jetty was producing this dark, very viscous oil, and people were saying, oh, nobody wants that. But that was actually a lot healthier for you than what we're seeing now. And so understanding the cultivation, the manufacturing aspects of it, I think is super important. And it goes back again, education. Giving these guys the understanding and taking the time and putting the money into that. Because that is where the real payback is gonna come with repeat customers. It's not gonna happen by, you know, just deciding, oh, we're gonna just talk. But being really focused and specific about how you're gonna educate that customer and telling that customer that there is precise dosage. And if you wanna start, here is the dosage pen, and this is a great way for you to start with dosing on a vaporizer. And then if you wanna start, go to this, here's another product that you can do that with. And those products and the development of those products should be the top of mind for manufacturers.
And if you're, let's say you're a retailer and you're somebody that wants to be able to better educate your consumer on these types of products or on, you know, extraction methodologies. You know, you mentioned CRC. Obviously, a lot of people don't know what color remediation is.
Right.
So if you're a retailer, you know, being a manufacturer, how would you best say to the retailer, here's how you can get breakthrough to the consumer? Is it just demo days, or is there something that they can do on an ongoing basis?
They need to educate the bud tenders, you know, just consistently educating them. So one of the things that I did with the brand that I was consulting with last year that Hanu we worked with was we went in and we worked with, I can't remember if it was Lemon Haze or it was another company that we worked with, but they had a website platform just for education. So I could go in, I could load up all the information. We had a brand page, it was free. We could put videos in there, we could load up all the information about all the products, and when you went to that page, I could send that to a buyer. A buyer can then distribute it to all of his bud tenders. As they go in, they will get the training, they do a small like 10 to 20 question test afterwards. If they completed it, I sent them a free gift.
Smart.
So then everybody comes back and I see every single test that comes back that everyone's passed. So we saw sales, I'll give you, I don't want to say their name, but we had a dispensary in San Francisco. They were the only ones selling this battery. They literally went from 100 batteries to the last order before I left with them was 10,000 units. That was all done through education. That was because the bud tenders were being educated in the very beginning, and then you, and once they get the education, they will become advocates for your brand. And so the brands that don't invest in that, or the retail dispensaries that don't require that, are gonna lose.
I mean, the bud tenders are the first point of contact with your consumer. They're more important as a tastemaker to your consumer than, say, your brand manager or your purchasing officer. The way that you think that dispensaries should go about it is definitely making sure that their bud tenders are trained, tested on every product that they're pushing, because otherwise, the consumer is just going to pick random
stuff.
And people don't want the old Cali day of saying, oh, this is fire, that's fire, because fire is subjective. Like, what are you actually looking for?
12% for me can be fire.
Right.
Because I don't need 30% in order for it to be fire. It's just the quality of the cannabis and we're in the company that's producing it. But I do think that a lot of these guys need to, you know, understand that if you don't have the bud tenders, you need to have a patient specialist, one person or two people that's dedicated just to educating the consumer. One of the dispensaries in California, Urbana, they used to bring in this lady that's a good friend of mine, Nurse Barbara. And Nurse Barbara is like 75 years old, and she would go into Urbana and they would have these classes for seniors to come in, or anyone who wanted education to come in. I'll tell you, the worst thing I ever saw in a dispensary was a cancer patient come in after just having chemo, and it was recommended that she go get a vape pen. And she came in, took the vape pen, they did not talk to her beforehand, and she literally fell out right in the floor. And that was like the worst experience I had ever seen. And then, you know, I went and tried to help her. She was with her husband. And I was like, they should have talked to you about this. Because when chemo patients take cannabis initially, sometimes it has that shock effect on the cannabinoid system. And somebody should have explained that to her. And so those are the things that I think that, you know, are important. But again, the consumer for me is top priority. So anything I can do on my website, because we do a lot of B2B business, but B2B and B2C, but e-com is where we do the bulk of our business. And if it's about education, I try to send them as much information as I possibly can. One of the things that we were gonna do at the party last night was to talk about terpenes and talk about terpene profiles and things of that nature. And more of that education is what we need to provide consistently, not only to the consumer, but to the bud tenders and to the people in these dispensaries. And if those retailers don't do that, then customers should be encouraged not to support them because they're not looking out for their best interest.
Well, because at the end of the day, I mean, it's not all about just the THC percentage, it's about the totality of the entourage effect, the terpene profile, the cannabinoid makeup. And so, you know, that not being relayed down to a consumer is a shorthand.
Exactly.
Because you have consumers that are going to become advocates, not just for your brand, but for cannabis in general. If somebody has a cancer issue, they're going through chemotherapy.
Right.
They obviously know other people who are going through the same thing.
Right.
They could recommend it to their friends and say, hey, I had this great experience. How best would you say for someone to encourage? Maybe somebody's apprehensive to test cannabis for the first time. How would you encourage them to say, hey, give it a try for these specific reasons, but how would you kind of ease somebody in?
I'll give you a great example. I was in Key West, Florida back in June of 2020. My daughter was turning 21. She decided not to go on a trip. Me being the overprotective dad, I decided I was gonna go just to be in the shadows. And so I went anyway. And I'm sitting at my hotel, and I'm out there in a meeting, and I end up at the bar, and I'm talking to this couple. They're from Alabama, okay? I've been to Alabama, I know Alabama. And very apprehensive about cannabis. So the first thing I did was I went in my pocket, had a bag with it. I took out three different cannabis products. I said, here's flower, here's vape, here's the edible. You can choose from any of these. If this makes the stigma around this flower makes you feel uncomfortable, this is what this is for. This is what this edible that's only 2 milligrams, if you're dealing with inflammation at nighttime, before you go to bed, take this. This will work better for you at nighttime because you won't have the effects when you wake up in the morning. So me, as a good grandson, my grandmother was suffering from Alzheimer's, and I didn't want to see the person who had helped raise me deteriorate so fast. And so I told my mom, I was like, Mom, we need to try tinctures, you know? And she was against it. And I was like, Mom, we need to try this. And so I kept talking to her and telling her the benefits, and I was going and getting information. So again, going to get education and educating myself and then passing that information on to the consumer. And eventually, my grandmother got to a point that my mother was like, we have to try this. And so I sent her some tinctures, very reputable brand in California that focuses on a product that's wrapped around, you know, high cannabinoids and CBDs, and also, you know, I hate the word CBDs, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said CBDs. That's like a rookie one. But, you know, the benefit of CBD as well as THC, and I was like, you know, let's try it. And she started giving her the drops. In about a week, my mom seen like a 50% improvement in my grandmother. And so she was like, Rick, I thank you for telling me about this. And the same way with that guy, he was like, in Key West, he was like, here, he told his wife, he said, here's an educated man. Here's, this is not some guy, and I'm a stoner, but I'm not gonna present that way. He was like, here's someone talking education. Here's somebody saying, you can take this, or I got this little spray that you can medicate your food with 5 milligrams. Take it at nighttime. Don't take it if you're, you know, early in the morning, because you're gonna feel the effects. So giving them my experience, but bringing it down to a level where it's just like we're having a conversation one-on-one, and it's more like your doctor talking to you about an alternative medicine.
And I think that that's also necessary. Not just, you know, seeing somebody say, you know, in a multicolored tie-dye, you know, hemp hoodie trying to sell you a bag, but somebody who's actually educated on the plant saying, hey, you know, this will work for you, and this is the reason why this will work, and here's how you can not have to affect the psychotropic effects of cannabis. You don't want to feel high. Take it at night. Get the wellness, but don't not necessarily, you know, be high throughout the day.
But I think presentation is a big part of it. You know, if we present as a professional industry, people are gonna take it as such. Right, I mean, it's okay to get high. I love to get high. I love to go do big diamonds and dabs. I've done a 1 gram on dab before and almost flipped out.
Oh, I remember the gram dab challenges at the High Times Cannabis Cups. Those were fun.
I did one of, and look, I'm 44 years old and I was at a Friendly Farms party in California at a mansion that they have given, and then they had a, all you can, they said, who was it? Take the biggest dab challenge.
Yeah.
So I'm like the older, one of the older guys in there, and I'm like, I'm gonna beat all these younger guys. And I go over there and I take this full 1 gram hit, and I'm okay. Mm-hmm. I take it down, I don't even cough. They're like, man, this dude is like Iron Man or something. And then I felt it kick in about 10 minutes later, and I had to get the hell out of there. I literally had to get out of there.
Yeah.
It was a, my wife was like, don't ever do that again, okay? But
no, I remember the High Times Cannabis Cups when they would have a, I can't remember which vendor it was when I did it, but they had if you could take the full gram, it's a free dab.
And a free dab?
Free dab.
I'll take a free steak for 64-ounce steak, it was, if that's the case.
It just blew me away. But yeah, I mean, there's the party aspect of it and the wellness aspect of it. I believe that a lot of people who are enjoying the wellness aspect of it, that side I think is going to grow and continue, especially with 55 plus, again, being the fastest growing demographic in cannabis. Do you feel that at some point states will be able to look at medical or recreational states, states that haven't legalized any form of cannabis, and say, not only are we missing out, but we're doing a disservice to our citizenry by not being allowed to have a medical program in our state?
I think so. I mean, I was looking at Wyoming to move there. And I like the fact that big parcels of land, open country, but they don't have cannabis, right? And then I looked at the reasons why. I started looking at it. And what they decided was is that they have 71 or 76% of the support of the residents of the state who want cannabis legalization. Because it's heavily Republican and because they are pro-government, they said it, we will do it immediately when federal legalization comes. So if Congress comes in and says we'll legalize it, they are ready to do it. And I think a lot of states that are a little more conservative are on the fence about doing it. They're just waiting. Everybody wants to do it. I think, you know, if I'm not mistaken, you know, a lot of our states have some type of cannabis, either medical program or recreational program in place. So it's something that's there. I just really believe that once these guys legalize it, the floodgates will open up.
Are you hopeful for federal legalization in the next 3 to 5?
I'm not. I wasn't a fan of Prop 215. I thought that we were sending the wrong message. At the same time, I love cannabis. I like to get high. I love the fact that I was a chef. Nobody knew I smoked weed for the whole 8 years, 5 years I worked at that company, and it was like, he smoked weed? He was in the weed like this? And I'm like, bro, I'm like the biggest stoner. But I just didn't think it made sense for me to let people know that. And I still don't in certain situations, because it's a personal choice that I make for myself.
Right.
And it's really not, you know, when I go into business settings, I try to be sober. And I just think that federal legalization is going to make the prices go up so high that it's going to put it out of the reach for many of the consumers that this industry is depending on to support it. Because it's not just going to be, you know, wealthy people who are buying cannabis. It's going to be blue collar workers who go to work every day and who make minimum wage. And if they put obscene taxes on it, it's going to just price it out of reach. I mean, in California, I think taxes can get as high as like 24%. So I'm paying an extra 30, I'm paying the price of an eighth in taxes. So why would I do that? So I go to a dispensary that includes the taxes in their pricing. So I don't feel like I'm getting ripped off when I go.
Well, in Prop 64, definitely taxation is a huge problem in California. Do you feel that there might be taxation easing in the near term, especially for California, who's obviously one of the highest tax states in the
country? Well, they need to look at Oklahoma and take a playbook out of Oklahoma. Because, I mean, even though it's a wild, wild west, they're doing it right.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what is it, $2,500
a license? Yeah, like $3,500, $2,500. You know, canopy limits are, you know, extremely larger. You don't have all of the oversight. What was it, another state? They was like, they were going to make it so that you can just grow. You don't even need a license. You'll need a license to sell it retail. So if you wanted to sell it to another person, different store. But I don't know, man. I'm worried about the legalization. I was worried about the transition in California. And I think dispensaries, even though they're doing well, I think that they feel it at times that the pricing is just so high that they don't see, you know, the customer acquisition that they need. And I think customer acquisition rates are going to skyrocket over the next couple of years.
CPAs are already massively high.
Yeah.
I imagine it'll definitely go up. I know I only have you for a couple of more minutes, I do want to ask you kind of, when, now that you've taken over for Hanu Labs as the Chief Executive Officer, what are some things that we can expect to see in the next year or so that are changes that you're bringing to the company?
Definitely innovation. I'm looking to release in the next 12 months at least 2 products, in the next 18 months 4 products. So we have a very aggressive product plan. I put that in place because that's how I roll. I want to get it done. We don't have time as a company to just take our time to get it done. We're in a position right now where we have to, you know, move really quickly. And that's because, you know, because of Vapegate, because of the last 2 years, you know, how things were, we released a product, it didn't go so well. And so we got to get back to where we were. And, you know, I want to be in that conversation when they say, yo, who are the top vape companies in the cannabis space that produce, you know, desktops, portables? I want them to say, oh, Puffco, G-Pen, Hanu Labs, you know, I want to be in that top 5. And so that's where I'm going to push the company to go. And it's you know, it's not easy. And I know it's a lot of heavy lifting involved. But again, I go back to the beginning of our conversation. I'm going to be the first person that's up. And I've had, you know, I've talked to someone and they said, well, why do you think that way? I'm like, I got people who have companies with 50 and 100 employees. It's only a few of us. So I got to work just as hard as if I was that 100 to get to the same place. So until I can put a team around me and build that team, and that's another thing, I want to build a crack team of specialists in this space. I want, you know, people of color, I want men, I want women, I want all different colors, and I want everybody to be at the top of their craft or have a desire to get to the top of their craft. And that way all of us can just move in unison and make this company great. And then as those guys, you know, build their reputations, they can bring people in to train them and mentor them, and then they can move on to have their own companies, and I can help support them with their dreams and their goals because they helped do that for me.
We would like to thank Ricardo for his time and being on today's episode. You can find out more about Hanu Labs by visiting them online at www.hanulabs.com. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll see you here on the next episode of Conversations in Cannabis.